1017 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Caddo Parish Commissioner Chris Crackman joining us. Chris, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
How are y'all, Mike and Thomas?
Doing well. Good morning, Chris.
We're doing very well. Thank you, sir. It's got to be a little bit a brighter, sunshiny day for you. The judge has dismissed the lawsuit against you.
Absolutely. But first and foremost, and I might be going way too far out on a limb here, and I hope nobody files suit against me, but I want to make something very clear. Thomas is the brother that Lewis sounds like.
Oh, goodness. Wow, that's a hot take.
So I made a mistake when I said Lewis.
You can take that to the court and see how it comes out, but I just wanted to make that very clear.
You know, I really like Chris Crackman, I have to say.
Are you older or is Lewis older?
Lewis is older.
Oh, okay. Well, then that might punch a hole in that argument.
I mean, I'm not talking about the details. I mean, we can sort that out later. But
it's not important. I think we got the spirit of your comment, and it's Chris, well appreciated.
Chris, well, first of all, congratulations on the decision. But tell us how this lawsuit came about and what happened.
Well, you know, we had a 2% sales tax increase at a truck stop in Houston that I was thoroughly against.
Mm-hmm.
And in short terms, I rallied against it. And then, you know, there was an ICE raid at the truck stop and all sorts of other, you know, alleged things. And I tried to bring some of those things to light. And the day after the 2% sales tax was passed without my support, you know, I came on this show and tried to make it clear why I was against it. The questions.
And it's in your district, by the way.
Correct. And I just tried to bring a little bit of clarity to what was going on. And for the things I said, I was sued.
Now, there were allegations that the illegal immigrants were working at the truck stop. Am I remembering that correctly?
Correct. And you know, that wasn't, and I don't think a lot of people realize it. You know, everybody acts like I you know, came out of the woodworks with some kind of, you know, prolific information. But that wasn't anything that I ever said. That actually came from the Department of Homeland Security, or excuse me, the governor's Homeland Security, GOSEP. That came from the chairman of GOSEP and GOSEP member, State Representative Danny McCormick. So that wasn't anything I ever said. Mm-hmm. All I ever did was brought forward what they said about it. And so, and which is still a thing, by the way, you know, that's still something that I received. That's still a letter that all of us commissioners saw and is on the record.
About the illegal immigrants?
That's correct.
Okay. So the lawsuit was filed by the owners of the truck stop, correct?
Right. That's correct.
The TA truck stop in Houston. And so how did you hear about the judge? Were you there when the judge made the decision?
No, I wasn't. It was something that had been being talked about since late last week about the plaintiffs dropping the case and whether or not I would accept. I think initially, I think a settlement was sought, you know, for me to give an apology. And I think anybody that knows me for more than 2 days knows that that's never going to happen. And until eventually, you know, the plaintiffs, they elected to drop the case. And which I'm very grateful for. However, I think there's a lot of constituents that would like to have known how it's going to end. But my pocketbook wasn't very excited about it.
Now, Chris, I do have a question with respect to that. An important component of this has been, of course, your legal fees. My understanding is a decision was made by the commission not to to cover those fees on your behalf. There was some notion that when those comments were made, you were working outside your role as a Caddo commissioner and you were, you know, had to raise those funds privately. Is that Still an open issue with respect to now that the case has been dismissed, as far as you being able to get some recompense for the money that you had to pay in your defense?
Yeah, it is, and I'm still asking for relief by the Parish Commission. Unfortunately, I was denied merely immediately for my attorney's fees, which is unfortunate. However, you know, I've been asking for donations to my legal funds, to the Crack Pack, which I'm not a member of, but that's who's taking care of my legal fees. And thus far, it's worked out pretty well. The majority of the fees have been covered. And it's one of those deals where, and I'm going to be completely honest with you guys, is, you know, do I really want the taxpayers to pay for a legal issue that their commission didn't ask for, that their commissioner didn't mm-hmm. ask for?
Sure.
And so it kind of puts me in a tight spot, even though, you know, the seven Democrats on the commission are having their legal fees completely funded by your tax dollars, although the attorney general has recommended we not pay for their legal fees. So it kind of puts me in a tight spot, and I really hate to ask it's legal to even think about spending our tax dollars in that manner. And so I kind of go back and forth on it, to be honest. So you know, for now, I'm still asking for donations to wrap this thing up on what's owed. And listen, Steve Gillet and Harbison Medlock in New Orleans, they did a beautiful job on this case, because any other case that I've seen that looks anything similar to this drags out for years.
Right.
Well, good news that this has been resolved, and we appreciate you jumping on with us, Chris. I hope you have a great weekend now.
Well, if I could, I just want to throw this out there for my constituents and citizens just in general abroad,
mm-hmm.
is think about this. This case lasted a matter of months. It lasted 5 to 6 months, however long. I'm not going to say anything, but I do want constituents and citizens of Caddo Parish to ask themselves, why would they drop this case so quickly? If I was so guilty and I was so frivolous with my comments, why would they drop this case so quickly? You do the digging, and I'll just be happy that it's gone.
All right, Chris, thank you. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank y'all. Y'all too.
All right, 101.7 FM, 710.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Man, I'm almost glad it's Monday to get back and relax a little bit.
You had a hectic weekend too, huh?
What a weekend. Wow.
Jeez.
We had a fundraiser on Saturday? I'm lost. It's all muddled.
It all runs together now.
It was on Saturday for the Humane Society of Northwest Louisiana. And the great folks at Key Mexico just couldn't have been more gracious. They originally had set up the fundraiser months ago. It's one of the biggest ones. It's called Black Dog October.
Oh, yeah.
And right. They focus on, I talked about it last week.
Yeah.
Focus on adopting black dogs, just as sweet as any other dogs.
Yeah.
But, of course, we originally scheduled it at Marilyn's place.
Yeah,
Boz was always real friendly and helpful with the Humane Society.
Right.
But, of course, he sold.
Yeah, it hasn't been open for a couple of weeks.
So they've temporarily closed, and they're going to do some remodeling and some cleaning and some revamping there at Marilyn's place. So we had to kind of reboot at the last minute. And Key Mexico, the owners there, Rodrigo, and all of his staff and crew, just fantastic. And so we were able to set up there. And then it stormed all night.
Yeah.
Yeah. The storm came in during the afternoon. And
it was pretty rough there for a little while.
Yeah. But so we had that. What else was Saturday? I don't know. What about you? I'm trying to think. What else? I had so much going on.
I gave my passes up to my friend and his fiance for Prize Fest. I made myself very busy over the weekend.
Okay,
just thrifting and following leads on my collections.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There you go.
Grabbed up a few records and about 40 tapes.
You've gone back to VCR.
Yeah,
that's so crazy.
I'm a VHS guy. I got a lot of good 90s blockbusters this weekend. It's fantastic.
Well, I talked to Erin over the weekend.
Yes.
She's doing great.
Yeah.
All reports are good. She does have some recovery time. So, but she's moving around and
fantastic to hear it.
Yes.
Oh yeah. She'll be back in here ordering us around in no time, I'm sure.
Well, and she is going to be working probably starting later this week from home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she's everything's well. Thanks for those who have who's been asking.
Yes.
She's doing very well. Oh, and I helped my sister move on Saturday. Saturday too. Yeah. Ugh. When you have a truck and a trailer.
Yeah. See, I got rid of my truck and I haven't been asked once to help anybody move.
Yeah.
It used to be a monthly thing.
I've got the Humane Society trailer connected right now to my truck.
Lord.
Well, I had hooked it up and the way the setup is, it's really difficult to get connected because they've got it in a fenced in area and you have to kind of hop a curve. It's just very difficult.
Wow.
And I knocked it off the little, they have boards propped up on it, and it tore the pigtail off.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
So now I've got to take it and get it rewired, get a new pigtail put on. Not a big deal.
Right.
It's not a major thing, but it's a pain in the butt.
Right.
You know, one of those.
Got to deal with it.
Lewis R. Avalone in for Erin. And like I say, she'll be out this week, but she's doing well. We'll keep you posted. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on that free Keel app.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
FM, 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty, of course, Erin out. Lewis R. Avalone in studio. Lewis, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Thank you for I know you're giving up time and sleep to join me, and
it's all good.
Deeply appreciate it.
It's a privilege to be here with you and Ruben and all of the listeners. Now, I may sound like someone that you have heard before on the radio. I get that a lot, actually.
But if you're older, we're talking about Thomas, your brother.
Yes,
who stepped in last week a couple of days with me. If you're older, then he sounds like you.
No, no, no.
Chris was trying to say you sound like him.
Oh, he was a hoot in terms of.
Yeah.
I got a couple of folks who texted me and said, no, you know, you sound a lot like Thomas.
That's funny. Later this morning, we've got Richard Llewellyn from the Weather Channel going to be joining us just after the break.
Yes.
And then after the 7 o'clock news, Daniel Erspommer joining us. Looking forward to talking with him. Some really exciting economic development news for Louisiana. Our biggest problem, we need to get out of our own way in Louisiana.
Of course.
Shreveport, too, specifically. And our self-perception needs to change. But I want to talk to you also, coming up later this morning, this No Kings rally that the sheriff apparently decided to attend, and then this apparent sniper's nest.
Oh, absolutely.
That they found
another assassination attempt on the president, certainly.
That's my fear right now. That's my biggest fear, is our president's safety.
Well, he's using the short steps now.
I saw that.
Out of Air Force One.
For a different reason than Joe Biden had to use them.
Precisely. Just to keep his keep him as low to the ground as possible.
Lewis R. Avalone in for Aaron. We'll talk with Richard Llewelling from the Weather Channel right after the break. 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL, Mike and McCarty.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, joining us, Weather Channel meteorologist Richard Llewelling. Richard, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, we're doing well. Lewis is in for Aaron. We finally are seeing a little bit of fall weather.
About time, isn't it?
It's about time. Now, I'm not complaining about the rain, because we haven't had rain for weeks. We got a huge storm came in Saturday.
Yeah, and we've got another one coming in tonight. In fact, that we've got a system that's back out over parts of northern Colorado, working on up into parts of Nebraska, and stretching on up into the Dakotas. And that system's going to come in later tonight. We'll probably bring us a little bit of light shower activity coming in early tomorrow morning. And then we're going to get another surge of cool air that will be coming in as we move into the latter half of the week. And basically just going to kind of reinforce the nice fall weather that we'll see in the middle and latter half of the week. We'll see temperatures falling into the low 80s for highs, and overnight lows are going to be in the 50s. But this morning, it's pretty chilly out there. We've got 50 here in Treeport right now. A lot of 40s showing up in some of the outlying areas this morning. So, you know, it's definitely a day to dig out the light jacket, but, you know, we'll get a nice recovery today, as that southerly winds out in advance of that next system can help push those temperatures up into the 80s later today.
So you're saying there's no chance of winter precipitation this week, despite the falling temperatures and the moisture moving in?
Yeah, don't dig out the snow boots just yet. Yeah, it's going to be pretty warm here this week, especially during the day. Tonight, you know, it's really not going to be as chilly as it's going to be this morning. You know, we got these day starting off the day in the 40s and 50s. You know, with the clouds advancing in tonight, with this next system, lows are only expected to fall into the mid 60s tonight, and then we'll be in the 80s again tomorrow, around 80 degrees before the temperatures start to fall off again on Wednesday morning, if we'll go back down into the 40s again. So, you know, this is kind of a, you know, what we would normally get in the fall. You know, this is kind of what we kind of would expect.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, nothing really, you know, screaming anything out of the ordinary. There is better news on the rain front, though. Looks like as we approach the weekend, we are going to see another good chance of showers and storms coming into the forecast as we head into Friday night and Saturday. In fact, with the next system coming in, we may get an inch of rain out of this next system coming in. So, you know, Friday night into Saturday kind of looks to be a wash, and maybe some lingering showers into Sunday. And, you know, isn't the Louisiana State Fair, something like that, getting ready to get started here?
Of course.
I think it was Aaron that said that, you know, we kind of get that chance for storms around the fair time. And, I think that's what's going to happen again. We are seeing the indications that we may see some decent storms if we get ready to go into the fair.
That's what I don't know. Is it just the time of year that they're kind of jinxed with? Because it gets,
yeah.
They start October 30th is when the fair opens. Is it just this time of year? Because it does. It seems like it rains for a week every year during the fair.
Yeah. And, you know, usually this has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, much of our part of the world, especially East Texas, northern Louisiana, Arkansas, you know, we're going into that seasonal change where we're starting to see, you know, some of these fronts that are dropping down out of Canada get further down the jet stream is starting to play an influence on our weather. So, you know, it's kind of one of those deals that we start to feel the influences of, you know, stuff that's further north is dropping southward. And we kind of get into that battle zone situation where we're dealing with showers and storms, and that is 100% true. This is normally the time of the year when we start to see those systems start to come in, and you know that will bring us those better opportunities for rain. Unfortunately, it just will happen to coincide with the fair.
Halloween falls on a Friday night this year, which just kind of works out perfectly. And it looks like we're in for some beautiful Halloween weather, even dipping into the 40s.
Yeah, it's definitely looking like it's going to be, you know, the look and feel of Halloween for the architect for sure. You know, it looks like we may see some highs as we get on out in the longer range. We're seeing some indications that we may see some daytime highs in the 60s. Overnight lows falling into the 40s. And so, you know, that's perfect trick-or-treating weather, and I think that's what we're going to see here as we get on out toward the end of next week.
Somebody said if there's a lot of acorns on the ground, which we have right now, it's going to be a really cold winter. Are we looking at a really cold winter for Shreveport-Bossier?
Indications are we're not. Because we're going into a La Nina right now. And that usually means that, you know, areas, you know, across Texas, through the Gulf Coast, and stretching on up into parts of the Southeast are going to be looking at a warmer than average winter. And that's what NOAA has indicated in their, you know, winter forecast that came out last week, that temperatures in the December, January, February timeframe are actually going to be warmer than average for us here in the Architects. It looks like the battle zone, though, for winter weather is going to be the Great Lakes, Ohio Valley, into the Northeast, you know, where the better opportunities for winter weather is going to be. But, you know, there's always that chance, you know, that we get a system that works, you know, down toward the Architects, you know, that brings us those chances for some winter weather concerns. And I don't think this winter is going to be any different than any other winter. So best advice, stay tuned. We'll be watching the trends of the forecast as we get further along.
If you don't like the weather in Louisiana, just hang on.
That's exactly right.
Richard Llewellyn with the Weather Channel. Thank you so much, Richard. Have a good morning.
Thank you. You too.
Daniel Erspommer going to be joining us after the news, top of the hour. Lewis R. Avalone in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL, Mike and McCarty.
Stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Lewis R. Avalone in for Aaron. Update, if you missed it earlier this morning, Ruben, you heard from Aaron also. We got a report. She's staying with a friend right now, but everything's good. She had a procedure middle of last week,
right,
and everything went well.
That is great news. Great news, obviously.
Yes, all reports look really good. She's already up and around, and she's not real hungry, she says, right now, but she's got food. People are lined up to take care of her.
So. Well, we have such a fantastic medical community here in Shreveport and Bossier City.
Really
some
do.
Of the most
we really
talented
do.
Doctors and yes. medical professionals, and some of the most innovative, you know, state-of-the-art equipment. It's amazing. It truly is amazing. There are some amazing professionals here in Shreveport-Bossier area. So, you know, I'm glad that she's doing well, but it doesn't surprise me.
Right.
So, but we're very grateful.
Yes, very grateful
and certainly thankful to God.
Positive reports. So just to give you an update on that. How about your weekend? Everything copacetic?
Absolutely. Everything is going well. We are hoping to have the governor of Louisiana on our show possibly next week, hopefully in studio. Of course, speaking of American Ground right. Radio, heard here nightly on KEEL from 5 to 7
yes.
p.m. Shameless plug.
You and Stephen Parr.
Air quotes. Yeah, Stephen Parr and myself host a two-hour show. And mm-hmm. if you haven't joined us before in the evenings, maybe, you know, it's not the time that you necessarily might be listening to radio. We certainly welcome you each and every evening.
I certainly do. And I listen on the app, too, when I'm walking the dogs. So
And sometimes you text. And I'm always grateful to hear your thoughts. Absolutely.
Yeah, as you roll your eyes.
No,
yeah.
No. You know, some of the texts that we get, and just like on your show here in the morning.
Sure.
the listeners are so much more insightful and smart than I am. Now, Stephen probably won't admit anyone smarter than him. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding, Stephen, if you're listening. But nevertheless, our listeners, they're so much more insightful.
Well, it's always good to get another perspective. And I have friends that will tell me, I were listening and I wanted to call you or I wanted to text you, but I didn't want to bother you. And I'm like, dude, text.
Absolutely.
Text.
Absolutely.
Let me know. Let me know what's going on. Let me know if I'm wrong. No, you're wrong. You know?
And we encourage people to call. You all do as well. You all have a great dialogue with your listeners.
Because you guys do it live also.
We certainly do. And, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, especially my children, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. You know what I'm saying?
I'm never in the wrong room.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm never in the wrong room, Lewis.
I'm always in the right room, I promise you. But that's the attitude that we must have at every
right.
age. You know, there's some folks who say, well, I'm just setting my ways.
Yeah.
Well, you shouldn't be.
Right. Yeah.
Get out of that room.
You're not helping yourself. Some great economic news. We've got Daniel Erspommer going to be joining us coming up after the break. Micah McCarty, Lewis R. Avalone in for Aaron, 1017 FM, 710keel.com. FM, 710 Keel. Micah McCarty, Aaron out. Lewis R. Avalone is in studio for Aaron. And on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline from the Pelican Institute, Daniel Erspommer joining us. Daniel, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Great to have you with us. You had a recent story on the opening of Buc-ee's here in Louisiana. Of course, we know there's one coming in South Louisiana and one up here in North Louisiana in Ruston. And as exciting as that is for Ruston, Louisiana, and we know it's going to bring, we've seen what it's done over in Terrell, Texas. The entire area has just exploded economically. But I love what you said. It's not just about Ruston's economy, but it shows that Louisiana and the state economy is moving in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, the legislature and the governor have been hard at work trying to address some of those major issues that have long kept companies like Buc-ee's, despite, as I'm sure you know, its roots right here in Louisiana in Catahoula Parish. But
a lot of people might not realize that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Louisiana really should be the home of Buc-ee's. Of course, Texas has claimed that mantle, but, you know, we'll get our beaver nuggets soon, and maybe we'll change that history.
Yeah, the founders, he says his grandparents had a small-town general store, which kind of was the blueprint for Buc-ee's. In Catahoula Parish.
That's exactly right. Right in Catahoula. And excuse me. And of course, if you look at, we compare ourselves to Texas all the time, of course. But, you know, if you look at income tax, it's zero in Texas, you know, business climate growing. They've addressed lawsuit abuse. So they have more work to do there. Not to suggest Texas is perfect. In fact, if Louisiana got our policies right, there's no reason we shouldn't be not only competitive with Texas, but frankly, even more prosperous and full of opportunity than the state of Texas.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Of course, last fall, Louisiana lawmakers made a change to the state tax policy. And in the end, lawmakers placed a flat 3% income tax on all households, regardless of income. What are the chances that this legislature will do away with that 3%? And bring the state income tax down to zero?
Well, I'm optimistic about it. Of course, what it's going to take is ensuring that they hear from their constituents, your listeners, you, me, everybody else, that that is a high priority and something that they that we want. But I can tell you, talking with lawmakers, this is certainly something on their agenda. We've put forward at the Pelican Institute a few different ideas about how you might get there. But at the end of the day, if we're going, if we have any hope of being competitive with our neighboring states, with the South, with the rest of the world, phasing out that income tax has to be the highest priority on the list.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Daniel, you say that, that we, you know, the people need to let our representatives know this is how we feel about the whole state income tax issue. But do they want it? You say you have spoken with legislators about it. This is a priority. I mean, it's one thing for the people to say, yes, we want this. But do the legislators want it? Do they believe it, that this is good policy? This is good for the future economic development of Louisiana?
You know, I don't know that I'd say the entire legislature is there, but I will tell you that individuals from across the state, especially these more recently elected men and women, the last couple of election cycles, there's a lot of energy toward big transformational changes like ending the income tax. I'll tell you the biggest thing that stands in the way is this fear, and we've tried to help quell this, that, you know, somehow eliminating the income tax means we're going to have to slash government or you know, make some kind of draconian cuts. The truth of the matter is, if we had just slowed down the growth of spending, the growth, not even cuts, back in 2015 or 2016, we would have eliminated or become or come very darn close to it, the income tax already today. So what this requires moving forward is just to pull the reins back to make sure government doesn't grow faster than the rest of the state. And if we can do that, we can eliminate this income tax. Our suggestions show in 8 to 10 years without really any major changes. And if you wanted to actually go in and doge the state, find deficiencies, you could do it faster than that.
Talking with Daniel Erspommer from the Pelican Institute. Daniel, and I know you say slow the growth, but you said at the Pelican Institute you had two or three options for the state to consider to move toward that zero income tax. Is there anything you can share with us on your thoughts?
Absolutely. Our proposal...
Because that money's got to come from someplace.
Well, it does. However, consider that the state budget has grown by 80% over the last decade.
Right. Yes.
So the big challenge here is not a revenue problem in terms of getting to that zero income tax. The challenge is a spending problem. And of course it's complicated, and we, you know, some of those things were attempted to be addressed in Amendment 2 that of course failed this spring, and some of those will be back on the ballot next spring in April for voters to take individual pieces of what was in that amendment. There's more to do. You know, our proposal says first you got to put a meaningful spending limit in place that actually says we cannot grow faster than inflation and population. Mm-hmm. So if the population's growing and there's inflation, obviously that means there are more taxpayers, right? Ideally, and we can sustain that. But otherwise, really have a meaningful cap, and then use the surplus collections of taxes over that cap to buy down, to phase out that income tax rate over time. By the way, you can do this without sacrificing meaningful spending that needs to be done on roads and bridges to improve Louisiana's infrastructure. It's one of these things that sounds too good to be true, but you really get into the data and the math, and it's really not that hard. It's absolutely doable, but it does take some discipline and restraint from the legislature to actually say we're not going to continue to just spend and spend and spend.
Well, hopefully it'll be a little bit better with the Republicans being in charge.
Well, you would think so.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying hopefully.
Right.
You know, look, this is a bipartisan problem, whether it's here in Louisiana you know, at the federal government. It is the incentive and structure of government to continue to grow and grow and grow.
Because every representative has their own pet projects in their districts that they want funded.
That's right. And every lobbyist they hear from that walks in the door, you know, it's funny. I'll walk in and, And regularly, when I talk to a lawmaker, they say, oh, thank goodness you're here. You're not asking me to spend any more money.
Right.
You know, this is, I consider myself, you know, somewhat of a lobbyist for the people, right?
Right.
For taxpayers.
Absolutely.
You know, but that's what they have to hear is, listen, we know this is a state challenge. We've got to get the state more competitive, which means saying, you know, we're going to understand that these pork barrel projects, pet projects, and, you know, continuing to just spend more of our taxpayer money isn't the pathway to get there. Just like you and I and the rest of your listeners have to have a budget and tighten the belt sometimes in our household budget or small business budget. The government needs to be doing the same and more, because they are stewards of our money. And sometimes I think it's easy to forget that.
Daniel Erspommer with the Pelican Institute. We got to take a quick break. Can you hold with us, Daniel, through the break?
Sure, I'd love to.
We'll be right back. Mike and McCarty, Lewis Avalone, in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
From Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Daniel Erspommer with the Pelican Institute on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Lewis Avalone in for Aaron, Micah McCarty. Daniel, we got some good news, like at the end of last year. Outmigration actually changed directions a little bit for the state. We didn't lose more people than we brought in.
Amazing.
I know. It really is. I think our worst problem in not only in Louisiana or in Shreveport, but in Louisiana, our worst problem is our own self-perception.
Yeah.
It's we've been so used to being on the, you know, number 50 or number 49 in education or income, or those metrics are actually turning around.
You know, they are, and it's such good news, and I just hope it shows the people, the lawmakers, everyone that, you know, when you start to move in the right direction, we've got a lot of work to do, but
sure,
just heading the right direction changes everything. It changes the perception of potential investors and families who may want to move here, businesses who may want to move here or locate a new facility, whether it's Meta or Bucky's or
right.
Or shipbuilders down south. You know, it's they're fix the drivers that make those decisions: taxes, education, sort of continuity and stability of government. You can solve those things. We actually get on the list and turn things around. You know, I know you know this. The last time we grew faster than the rest of the country was 1920. And, you know, there's just no question we ought to be the economic and opportunity powerhouse of the Southeast, between energy and timber, land, water, all the natural resources, the rivers, interstate highways, railroads, all those things say Louisiana ought to be the nexus of opportunity in the country. And, you know, the changes that we're starting to make, we're getting there. And if we keep our foot on the gas pedal, you know, we're going to see our kids and grandkids come home, and fewer of them leave in the first place, and really create a Louisiana that's the state it should be, a land of opportunity.
Yeah, and initially, of course, when companies are looking to invest in Louisiana, initially they look at New Orleans. I mean, let's just be very frank. Because a lot of folks think of New Orleans first when they think of Louisiana, and then, of course, they see the richness that is the rest of the state. But nevertheless, Helena Moreno is the new mayor of New Orleans. How do you feel that the new mayor of New Orleans is going to affect our economic development or the attractiveness of investment in Louisiana because of her election?
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. New Orleans, for better or for worse, is a major driver of a lot.
It's a barometer of the state.
It is. It absolutely is. And bless my heart, I'm a resident of Orleans Parish. You know, I think there's a fair amount of optimism. You know, New Orleans,
it couldn't be worse.
That has been sort of my answer to everybody is, gosh, it's hard to imagine worse. You know, I think the mayor-elect is, is competent. She's putting together a good transition team. Look, the building blocks are there and the roadmap is there. You got to continue to keep, get a handle on crime. You've got to fix the roads and make sure the streetlights work, and handle drainage, and flooding measures. If you do those things, the rest of it all sort of falls in place. Not that there isn't work to do, but we need a mayor in New Orleans that focuses on the basics, that makes it a welcoming and friendly place for people to come to, which they do by the millions, tens of millions. You know, I'm mildly optimistic. You know, the history of New Orleans is messing things up if they have the opportunity. So let's see if we can reverse that legacy and really make the city a place to shine again.
Do you think the new mayor will reverse direction in some instances, or do you think it's just going to be a continuation of LaToya Cantrell's administration?
No, I definitely think there will be some reversal in course. You know, Helena has been the leading adversary of Mayor Cantrell during her time on the council. You know, the challenge, of course, is, and it's, I think, the same trap that LaToya Cantrell fell into, which is the national progressive infrastructure is very persuasive in telling particularly mayors of cities like New Orleans, you could be a star if you just embrace all these progressive policies. And frankly, at a municipal level, as we know, obviously, you know, we want someone to be as free market as possible, but just doing the basics well, the management of municipal government can go a long way, even if they accept that siren's call of fame.
And we've got to turn those Saints around too, by the way. Good gosh.
Oh my gosh. No kidding.
No mayor in the world's going to help that.
Well, she was in the box with Mrs. Benson at the game.
So. Oh wow. Okay. Daniel, thank you so much. We appreciate your input.
As always, thanks, guys. And tell Aaron we're rooting for quick recovery.
Thank you so much. Daniel Erspommer with the Pelican Institute. Mike and McCarty, Louis Avalone in for Aaron. 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Louis Avalone in for Aaron. Mike and McCarty, they had the big No Kings protest rally. They had them all across the country, including here in Shreveport. They were set up across the out in front of the Caddo Parish Courthouse on Texas.
Well, first of all, and Justice Kavanaugh reportedly posted a screenshot of the New York Times article from 2024 showing that President Trump won the election.
An election,
meaning right. He was not kinged or crowned, or, you know, this is not a monarchy. This is, in fact, a representative democracy, or excuse me, a republic. But nevertheless, right. It's a representative government. And it would have been more appropriately titled in terms of the protest of "We Hate Donald Trump." I mean, just come on out and say it.
Well, that's all it is.
We hate the president. It's okay. I can respect that. We have a difference of opinion. You're not a terrible person. You hate the president. You do not like Donald Trump. You don't like what he's doing. You don't agree with his policies. Just call it that instead of this charade of no kings. And by the way, realize that the government is shut down for all intents and purposes, strictly and solely and exclusively by Democrats.
That's right.
Now, if this were a monarchy, could the minority party shut down the government?
And hold it hostage?
And when the government finally does reopen, will the No Kings crowd give credit to King Trump for reopening the government?
What?
Or will they say, no, our Democratic brethren in Congress are responsible for opening the government? So if your Democratic leaders in Congress are the ones responsible for opening up government, then it sounds like we've got a representative government already. So what are we protesting here?
Well, that was my next question. What I don't see the logic here. Okay,
there
like you
no
said,
logic.
you don't like Donald Trump. I understand that. He's in some ways not likable. His personality can be abrasive. I understand that. But how do you correlate that into him trying to be a dictator and a king? Is it because he's trying to protect U.S. citizens when ICE is trying to do their job and follow federal law? So in those cities like Chicago and like Los Angeles are fighting our own government, so he has to bring in troops?
Well, if you watch the person on the street interviews, you know, reporters going out and asking folks and just everyday folks on social media going out and asking the protesters, what are you protesting? And there's a litany of grievances. The problem
if
with
they
that,
can even come up with an answer.
The problem is those grievances, if true, I totally understand where they're coming from, where the protester is coming from. The problem is those list of grievances are completely and factually inaccurate. And so they don't know what they don't know. And I'm not saying that in a condescending way. But, you know, you've got Robert De Niro out there calling Stephen Miller, the deputy chief of staff to President Trump, calling him a Nazi.
Right.
So that's the kind of ridiculousness that is circulating.
And when we're going to take a quick break, when we get back, our own sheriff was at the No Kings rally locally. We'll talk to you about that. Mike and McCarty. Louis Avalone in for Aaron, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Now breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, social media, especially locally, ablaze with pictures of our sheriff taking pictures with the protesters at the No Kings rally downtown Shreveport over the weekend. And you told me during the break, you said, well, I've got some thoughts on that.
Well, I look, Sheriff Whitehorn, I'm sure he does a great job by and large. But he was there in uniform. And I think a lot of folks saw him there as an endorsement of those protesters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, let's be very frank. Because he is a Democrat, he's a registered Democrat, has been his entire life, it is more likely than not that he does sympathize with those who were protesting and their grievances against this president. But he was there in uniform. He did have deputies that were there.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, he's probably of the opinion, hey, I'm doing my job. I mean, what kind of leader of the Caddo Parish Sheriff's Department would I be if I wasn't out alongside my deputies, especially at an event like this that could turn, you know, out of control mm-hmm. or otherwise become incendiary? There has been violence at these types of protests before.
Sure.
Within the crowd. And I get that. But at the same time, it does become a question of optics because,
right.
you know, there's a lot of folks in the parish. And Sheriff Whitehorn, while he was running for election, he said he would be the sheriff of all the people mm-hmm. in Caddo Parish. And so when the leader of the Caddo Parish Sheriff's Office shows up, you know, I'm not surprised that a lot of folks are riled up about that he's at a No Kings rally when obviously there were dozens of Caddo Parish Sheriff's deputies that were certainly more than capable of maintaining
right,
the peace
right.
and of doing the job that needed to be done. What was he doing there? And
posing for pictures with the protesters, which you know is going to be all over social media.
Well, I mean, you know, that's probably hard for him to decline. Someone comes up, hey, Sheriff, can I get a photo with you? I mean, I get that part. I think the decision to be there in the first place may be something that I wouldn't have done if I was
mm-hmm.
sheriff,
mm-hmm.
Whichever side of the aisle, simply because, again, I ran on a platform of being the sheriff for all of Caddo Parish. And yet, you know, here it seems like I'm kind of joining
all
in.
Democrats shoulder, in Caddo Parish.
I am shoulder to shoulder with these folks that obviously do not like and do not agree with President Trump.
And look, they're fully within their rights to protest the president.
Oh, 100%.
But I don't understand this whole Kings thing. We're running short on time. We got a hard break here. I don't understand this correlation of dictator.
I think
and
that's
this
the marketing hook.
Rhetoric of Nazis and fascism, which leads to actions like happened in Butler, Pennsylvania during the campaign, leads to actions that happened on the golf course in Florida. And also, there was a new possible sniper's nest just discovered over the weekend.
There's nothing possible about that. That was a sniper's nest, an attack on the president.
We'll talk about that. Louis Avalone in for Aaron, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Back with Marty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Louis Avalone in for Aaron, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. I have said, obviously since Butler, Pennsylvania, during the campaign, what 1 millimeter could have made a difference in history. My biggest fear right now is the safety of our president. I don't think, and as he racks up more success, Louis, peace in the Middle East. And I say that knowing full well that historically that is a tentative position. Peace in the Middle East, Hamas and Israel coming to terms. I mean, Hamas is already breaking those terms. They're already on shaky ground trying to follow that. But the fact that President Trump did get our hostages home, did get us to this point, to where a ceasefire was even possible, working on Russia now and the Ukraine. The more success he racks up, the more worried I become. Because look at what happened in the first term. The economy was booming. Stock market was booming. Things were looking great. And then COVID. That didn't come out of the blue. That wasn't unplanned. I'm sorry. Call me a conspiracist, but that's what I believe.
And when you look back at how President Trump has shaped this administration, I think you see the wisdom that addresses that concern. And the wisdom there is he chose some of the best and brightest
yes.
and strongest conservatives. There's no question that there's any rhinos in that crowd. Obviously, Marco Rubio being one of them. J.D. Vance being another, and there's countless others. Of course, Speaker Mike Johnson, of course, he wasn't chosen by President Trump, but he was elected by the House of Representatives.
Yes.
But he did not become Speaker of the House without the support of President Trump. And the point I'm trying to make here is if someone believes that taking President Trump out, right, and if history has shown us anything, it's that anyone can get to anyone, anywhere. Okay, but I will say this. If someone thinks that taking President Trump out is going to stop his agenda, they have another thing coming. Because the Republican
right.
bench,
yes.
the MAGA bench, is just too deep at this point for that to occur.
Louis Avalone in for Aaron, Mike and McCarty. Positive economic news for the state of Louisiana. Daniel Erspommer joins us after the news top of the hour. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com. Mike and McCarty, Aaron out. Louis R. Avalone is in studio for Aaron. And on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline from the Pelican Institute, Daniel Erspommer joining us. Daniel, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Great to have you with us. Your story on the opening of Buc-ee's here in Louisiana. Of course, we know there's one coming in South Louisiana and one up here in North Louisiana in Ruston. And as exciting as that is for Ruston, Louisiana, and we know it's going to bring, we've seen what it's done over in Terrell, Texas. The entire area has just exploded economically. But I love what you said. It's not just about Ruston's economy, but it shows that Louisiana and the state economy is moving in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, the legislature and the governor have been hard at work trying to address some of those major issues that have long kept companies like Buc-ee's, despite, as I'm sure you know, its roots right here in Louisiana in Catahoula Parish.
A lot of people might not realize that.
Yeah, I mean, Louisiana really should be the home of Buc-ee's. Of course, Texas has claimed that mantle, but you know, we'll get our Beaver Nuggets soon, and maybe we'll change that history.
Yeah, the founders, he says his grandparents had a small-town general store, which kind of was the blueprint for Buc-ee's in Catahoula Parish.
That's exactly right, in Catahoula. And, excuse me, and of course, if you look at, we compare ourselves to Texas all the time, of course, but, you know, if you look at income tax, it's zero in Texas, you know, business climate growing, they've addressed lawsuit abuse, so they have more work to do there. Not to suggest Texas is perfect. In fact, if Louisiana got our policies right, there's no reason we shouldn't be not only competitive with Texas, but frankly, even more prosperous and full of opportunity than the state of Texas.
No, absolutely. Of course, last fall, Louisiana lawmakers made a change to the state tax policy. And in the end, lawmakers placed a flat 3% income tax on all households, regardless of income. What are the chances that this legislature will do away with that 3% and bring the state income tax down to zero?
Well, I'm optimistic about it. Of course, what it's going to take is ensuring that they hear their constituents, your listeners, you, me, everybody else, that that is a high priority and something that we want. But I can tell you, talking with lawmakers, this is certainly something on their agenda. We've put forward at the Pelican Institute a few different ideas about how you might get there. But at the end of the day, if we have any hope of being competitive with our neighboring states, with the South, with the rest of the world, phasing out that income tax has to be the highest priority on the list.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Daniel, you say that we, you know, the people need to let our representatives know this is how we feel about the whole state income tax issue. But do they want it? You say you have spoken with legislators about it. This is a priority. I mean, it's one thing for the people to say, yes, we want this. But do the legislators want it? Do they believe it, that this is good policy, this is good for the future economic development of Louisiana?
You know, I don't know that I'd say the entire legislature is there, but I will tell you that individuals from across the state, especially these more recently elected men and women, the last couple of polls, there's a lot of energy toward big transformational changes like ending the income tax. I'll tell you the biggest thing that today is this fear, and we've tried to help quell this, that, you know, somehow eliminating the income tax means we're going to have to slash government or, you know, make some kind of draconian cuts. The truth of the matter is, if we had just slowed down the growth of spending, the growth, not even cuts, back in 2015 or 2016, we would have eliminated or come very darn close to it, the income tax already today. So what this requires moving forward is just to pull the reins back to make sure government doesn't grow faster than the rest of the state, And if we can do that, we can eliminate this income tax. Our suggestions show in 8 to 10 years without really any major changes. And if you wanted to actually go in and doge the state, find deficiencies, you could do it faster than that.
Talking with Daniel Erspommer from the Pelican Institute. Daniel, and I know you say slow the growth, but you said at the Pelican Institute you had two or three options for the state to consider to move toward that zero income tax. Is there anything you can share with us on your thoughts?
Absolutely. Our proposal...
Because that money's got to come from someplace.
Well, it does. However, consider that the state budget has grown by 80% over the last decade.
Right. Yes.
So the big challenge here is not a revenue problem in terms of getting to that zero income tax. The challenge is a spending problem. And of course, it's complicated. And some of those things were attempted to be addressed in Amendment 2 that, of course, failed this spring. And some of those will be back on the ballot next spring in April for voters to take individual pieces of what was in that amendment. There's more to do. You know, first, you got to put a meaningful spending limit in place that actually says we cannot grow faster than inflation and population. Mm-hmm. So if the population's growing and there's inflation, obviously that means there are more taxpayers, right? Ideally. And we can sustain that. But otherwise, really have a meaningful cap and then use the surplus collections of taxes over that cap to buy down, to phase out that income tax rate over time. By the way, you can do this without sacrificing meaningful spending that needs to be done on roads and bridges to improve Louisiana's infrastructure. It's one of these things that sounds too good to be true, but you really get into the data and the math, and it's really not that hard. It's absolutely doable, but it does take some discipline and restraint from the legislature to actually say we're not going to continue to just spend and spend and spend.
Well, hopefully it'll be a little bit better with the Republicans being in charge.
Well, you think so?
Yeah, that's why I'm saying hopefully.
Right. You know, look, this is a bipartisan problem, whether it's here in Louisiana at the federal government. It is the incentive and structure of government to continue to grow and grow and grow.
Because every representative has their own pet projects in their districts that they want funded.
That's right. And every lobbyist they hear from that walks in the door, you know, it's funny. I'll walk in and regularly when I talk to a lawmaker, they say, oh, thank goodness you're here. You're not asking me to spend any more money.
Right.
You know, this is I consider myself, you know, somewhat of a lobbyist for the people. Right.
Right.
For taxpayers.
Absolutely.
But that's what they have to hear is, listen, we know this is a state challenge. We've got to get the state more competitive, which means saying, you know, we're going to understand that these pork barrel projects, pet projects, and, you know, continuing to just spend more of our taxpayer money isn't the pathway to get there. Just like you and I and the rest of us to have a budget and tighten the belt sometimes in our household budget or small business budget. The government needs to be doing the same and more because they are stewards of our money. And sometimes I think it's easy to forget that.
Daniel Erspommer with the Pelican Institute. We got to take a quick break. Can you hold with us, Daniel, through the break?
Sure, I'd love to.
We'll be right back. Mike and McCarty, Lewis Avalone, in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Daniel Erspommer with the Pelican Institute on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Lewis Avalone in for Aaron, Micah McCarty. Daniel, we got some good news, like at the end of last year, outmigration actually changed directions a little bit for the state. We didn't lose more people than we brought in.
amazing.
I know, it really is. I think our worst problem in not only in Louisiana or in Shreveport, but in Louisiana, our worst problem is our own self-perception. It's we've been so used to being on the, you know, number 50 or number 49 in education or income, or those metrics are actually turning around.
You know, they are, and it's such good news, and I just hope it shows the people, the lawmakers, everyone that, you know, when you start to move in the right direction, we've got a lot of work to do, but
just
heading the right direction changes everything. It changes the perception of potential investors and families who may want to move here, businesses who may want to move here or locate a new facility, whether it's Meta or Bucky's or shipbuilders down south. You know, it's they're fix the drivers that make those decisions: taxes, education, sort of continuity and stability of government. You can solve those things, we actually get on the list and turn things around. You know, I know you know this. The last time we grew faster than the rest of the country was 1920. And, you know, there's just no question we ought to be the economic and opportunity powerhouse of the Southeast, between energy and timber, land, water, all the natural resources, the rivers, interstates, railroads, all those things say Louisiana ought to be the nexus of opportunity in the country. And, you know, the changes that we're starting to make, we're getting there. And if we keep our foot on the gas pedal, you know, we're going to see our kids and grandkids come home and fewer of them leave in the first place, and really create a Louisiana that's the state it should be, a land of opportunity.
Yeah. And initially, of course, when companies are looking to invest in Louisiana, initially they look at New Orleans. I mean, let's just be very frank. Because a lot of folks think of New Orleans first when they think of Louisiana. And then, of course, they see the richness that is the rest of the state. But nevertheless, Helena Moreno is the new mayor of New Orleans. How do you feel that the new mayor of New Orleans is going to affect our economic development or the attractiveness of investment in Louisiana because of her election?
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. New Orleans, for better or for worse, is a major driver of a lot.
It's a barometer of the state.
It is. It absolutely is. And bless my heart, I'm a resident of Orleans Parish. You know, I think there's a fair amount of optimism. You know, New Orleans,
it couldn't be worse.
That has been sort of my answer to everybody is, gosh, it's hard to imagine worse. You know, I think the mayor-elect is competent. She's putting together a good transition team. Look, the building blocks are there and the roadmap is there. You got to continue to keep get a handle on crime. You've got to fix the roads and make sure the streetlights work and handle drainage and flooding measures. If you do those things, the rest of it all sort of falls in place. Not that there isn't work to do, but we need a mayor in New Orleans that focuses on the basics, that makes it a welcoming and friendly place for people to come to, which they do by the millions, tens of millions. You know, I'm mildly optimistic. You know, the history of New Orleans is messing things up if they have the opportunity. So let's see if we can reverse that legacy and really make the city a place to shine again.
Do you think the new mayor will reverse direction in some instances, or do you think it's just going to be a continuation of LaToya Cantrell's administration?
No, I definitely think there will be some reversal in course. You know, Helena has been the leading adversary of Mayor Cantrell during her time on the council. You know, the challenge, of course, is, and it's, I think, the same trap that LaToya Cantrell fell into, which is the national progressive infrastructure is very persuasive in telling particularly mayors of cities like New Orleans, you could be a star if you just embrace all these progressive policies. And frankly, at a municipal level, as we know, obviously, you know, we want someone to be as free market as possible, but just doing the basics well, the management of municipal government can go a long way, even if they accept that siren's call of fame.
And we've got to turn those saints around too, by the way. Good gosh.
Oh my gosh. No kidding.
No mayor in the world's going to help that.
Well, she was in the box with Mrs. Benson at the game.
So. Oh, wow. Okay. Daniel, thank you so much. We appreciate your input.
As always, thanks, guys. And tell Aaron we're rooting for quick recovery.
Thank you so much. Daniel Erspommer with the Pelican Institute. Mike and McCarty, Louis Avalone in for Aaron. 1017 FM, 710Keel.com.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710Keel.
Louis R. Avalone in for Aaron. Mike and McCarty, you brought up this story earlier this morning. Is this an example of another woke company trying to make a statement, or are they just trying to cash in?
I think it's a marketing gimmick, but it begs the question, right? And for those of you who may not have heard, Maxwell House, you know, which is that classic American brand of coffee.
Good to the last drop.
Absolutely. Well, now they've decided it's now Maxwell Apartment Coffee. Not Maxwell House, but Maxwell Apartment. Because they say housing has become so unaffordable for so many Americans that house is no longer inclusive. Now I'll give you that. I think that some of the policies, many of the policies coming out of Washington, D.C., and certainly in blue states, states that are led by Republican governors, as well as our urban cities like New York City and Chicago and Los Angeles, those woke policies, the woke ideology, have created a condition where you either have the very rich or the very poor.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't, and you basically have government's boot on the neck of small business folks.
Right.
And when that happens, you drive out the middle class, and all you've got left at that point are the very poor that are dependent on government in order to be alive. And then you've got the very rich. And that's certainly what has happened in New York City. It's what's happened in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly all up and down the West Coast of California.
Right. And just, you know what? Give me my good community coffee. We have community coffee here. I'm not buying Maxwell House anyway.
And, you know, part of the reason.
And they did say, look, this is a temporary.
No, I get
rebranding. Rebranding. It's just an attempt to cash in.
But when you look at Democrat policies in these communities where housing is unaffordable, zoning restrictions, environmental reviews, inflated property taxes, rent controls, endless regulation. I mean, you can't, for example, you can't build a shed in Los Angeles without 14 permits and a sustainability study. But in Texas and Florida and Tennessee, again, those are red states. People are still buying houses. People are still moving there in droves. Families are thriving. Builders are building. It's a very different situation.
And look at, in the last 30 seconds here before the break, Gavin Newsom, remember after the Palisades fires, Gavin Newsom made this big proclamation. We are going to simplify the rebuilding process. We're going to eliminate the needs for these permits, and we're going to help these homeowners. Well, how long has it been?
Oh,
how many of those homes have been rebuilt?
Now, it is absolutely outrageous, and I hope all of you will join me this Saturday for a protest of Maxwell Apartment Coffee. Bring back Maxwell House. What's the problem? Everyone else can protest. Why can't I?
Oh, I might as well, yeah. And plus, it's a Kraft Heinz company. Don't get me started. Louis Avalone in for Aaron. Mike and McCarty. Find out fall weather coming. More rain? We'll talk with Richard Llewellyn from the Weather Channel next. 1017 FM, 710Keel.com.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Weather Channel meteorologist Richard Lewelling. Richard, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, we're doing well. Lewis is in for Aaron. We finally are seeing a little bit of fall weather.
About time, isn't it?
It's about time. Now, I'm not complaining about the rain because we haven't had rain for weeks. We got a huge storm came in Saturday.
Yeah, and we've got another one coming in tonight. In fact, that we've got a system that's back out over parts of northern Colorado, working on up into parts of Nebraska and the Dakotas. And that system's going to come in later tonight. We'll probably bring this a little bit of light shower activity coming in early tomorrow morning. And then we're going to get another surge of cool air that will be coming as we move into the latter half of the week. And basically just going to kind of reinforce the nice fall weather that we'll see in the middle and latter half of the week. We'll see temperatures falling into the low 80s for highs, and overnight lows are going to be in the 50s. But this morning, it's pretty chilly out there. We've got 50 here in Treeport right now. A lot of 40s showing up in some of the outlying areas this morning. So, you know, it's definitely a day to dig out the light jacket, but, you know, we'll get a nice recovery today as that southerly winds out in advance of that next system can help push those temperatures up into the 80s later today.
So you're saying there's no chance of winter precipitation this week, despite the falling temperatures and the moisture moving in?
Yeah, don't dig out the snow boots just yet. Yeah, it's going to be pretty warm here this week, especially during the day. Tonight, you know, it's really not going to be as chilly as it's going to be this morning. You know, we got these day starting off the day in the 40s and 50s. You know, with the clouds advancing in tonight with this next system, lows are only expected to fall into the mid 60s tonight, and then we'll be in the 80s again tomorrow, around 80 degrees before the temperatures start to fall off again on Wednesday morning, if we'll go back down into the 40s again. So, you know, this is kind of a, you know, what we would normally get in the fall. You know, this is kind of what we kind of would expect.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, nothing really, you know, screaming anything out of the ordinary. There is better news on the rain front, though. Looks like as we approach the weekend, we are going to see another good chance of showers and storms coming into the forecast as we head into Friday night and Saturday. In fact, with the next system coming in, we may get an inch of rain out of this next system coming in. So, you know, Friday night into Saturday kind of looks to be a wash, and maybe some lingering showers into Sunday. And, you know, isn't the Louisiana State Fair or something like that getting ready to get started here?
Of course.
I think it was Aaron that said that, you know, we kind of get that chance for storms around the fair time. And, I think that's what's going to happen again. We are seeing the indications that we may see some decent storms as we get ready to go into the fair.
That's what it I don't know. Is it just the time of year that they're kind of jinxed with? Because it gets,
yeah.
They start October 30th is when the fair opens. Is it just this time of year? Because it does. It seems like it rains for a week every year during the fair.
Yeah, usually this has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, much of our part of the East Texas, northern Louisiana, Arkansas, you know, we're going into that seasonal change where we're starting to see, you know, some of these fronts that are dropping down out of Canada get further down the jet stream is starting to play an influence on our weather. So, you know, it's kind of one of those deals that we start to feel the influences of, you know, stuff that's further north is dropping southward. And we kind of get into that battle zone situation where we're dealing with showers and storms. And that is 100% true. This is normally the time of the year when we start to see those systems start to come in. And, you know, that will bring us those better opportunities for rain. Unfortunately, that will happen to coincide with the fair.
Halloween falls on a Friday night this year, which just kind of works out perfectly. And it looks like we're in for some beautiful Halloween weather, even dipping into the 40s.
Yeah, it's definitely looking like it's going to be, you know, the look and feel of Halloween for the architect for sure. You know, it looks like we may see some highs as we get on out in the longer range. We're seeing some indications that we may see some daytime highs in the 60s. Overnight lows falling into the 40s. So, you know, that's perfect trick-or-treating weather, and I think that's what we're going to see here as we get on out toward the end of next week.
Somebody said if there's a lot of acorns on the ground, which we have right now, it's going to be a really cold winter. Are we looking at a really cold winter for Shreveport?
Indications are we're not, because we're going into a La Nina right now. And that usually means that, you know, areas, you know, across Texas, through the Gulf Coast and stretching on up into parts of the Southeast are going to be looking at a warmer than average winter. And that's what NOAA has indicated in their, you know, winter forecast that came out last week, that temperatures in the December, January, February timeframe are actually going to be warmer than average for us here in the Arctic. It looks like the battle zone, though, for winter weather is going to be the Great Lakes, Ohio Valley, into the Northeast, you know, where the better opportunities for winter weather is going to be. But, you know, there's always that chance, you know, that we get a system that works, you know, down toward the Arctic, you know, that brings us those chances for some winter weather concerns. And I don't think this winter is going to be any different than any other winter. So best advice, stay tuned. We'll be playing, we'll be watching the trends of the forecast as we get further along.
If you don't like the weather in Louisiana, just hang on.
That's exactly right.
Richard Llewellyn with the Weather Channel. Thank you so much, Richard. Have a good morning.
Thank you. You too.
Daniel Erspommer going to be joining us after the news, top of the hour. Lewis R. Avalone in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL, Mike and McCarty.
Back Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Oh, my gosh. The No Kings rally? Is it No Kings protest? I don't know. Oh, by the way, congratulations. They win. We don't have a king. So,
well, from looking at lots of photos across the country, it looks like a Mardi Gras parade.
Why do they have to dress up like dinosaurs and witches? And I don't understand. I just don't get it. If you look at where we are as a country today, after 9 months of Donald Trump, as opposed to after 4 years of Biden, could you imagine? Lewis Avalone in for Aaron. Could you imagine President Harris?
Oh, let's please. Let's not start the week off that way. And I know there's some Harris folks out there listening right now. But look, you got to admit, I mean, from a global perspective.
Right.
There is more peace in the world today. And if you think that Vice President Kamala Harris would have been able to accomplish the same, then I guess for you, it's no different. But I think for most Americans, they realize that but for many of the positions that President Trump took, especially with respect to tariffs and what arguably was a courageous and gutsy move to take out Iran, for example.
Well, yeah.
I mean, all of these things together brought about the necessary pressure to get the Middle East, all these countries in the Middle East on board, and this peace agreement in place. Now, I know a lot of folks say, well, Democrats could have done that as well.
Well, and going back to the tariffs, Lewis, it proved all of the so-called experts wrong. Even Jerome Powell said, well, okay, the economy's doing better than we were expecting. And he's finally starting to lower rates. But they said if Donald Trump's reelected, he's going to start World War III.
Well, they've been saying that since 2015, that he didn't have the temperament, and that he would fly off the handle, that he is, you know, this megalomaniac, that egomaniac.
And he's negotiated, what, 9 peace deals now across all across the world?
Yeah,
again, proving the experts wrong. But these no kings you brought up, there was a post by a Caddo.
Yeah, let me ask you this. A Caddo Parish Sheriff's deputy allegedly made a post about the No Kings rally, and it was a complimentary post about the grievances that were being aired at this No Kings rally.
Mm-hmm.
And in that post, he refers to the president as an orange clown.
Right.
Now, do you think it's appropriate for a law enforcement officer to refer to the president of the United States as an orange clown. I mean, that's his First Amendment. This is this sheriff's deputy's, Caddo Parish sheriff's deputy's First Amendment right. But is it appropriate?
Is it appropriate? No, of course not. Is it legal? Sure. Will he face repercussions? I don't think so. But I think that would depend on the position of, and now if the previous sheriff was still in office, I think so.
Okay, but first responders, medical professionals, of course, you know, they run into a burning building. They're not checking someone's, you know, political party.
Right, right.
But at the same time, it just, there's something a little off-putting by that.
I agree. And that's on social media. You can see that post, like you say, allegedly by a Caddo Parish sheriff's deputy, disparaging the right wing, basically. So is it appropriate? Will he face repercussions? I don't think so. So, yeah, good question.
Might end up suing the Caddo Parish Sheriff's Department if he does. If he was censured, so to speak,
right,
with respect to, you know, making political posts, because law enforcement, they don't check their First Amendment right at the door. I mean, they certainly have a right to their...
But there's some different standards for people in public office like that, I think. We got it. We're up against the clock. Lewis, thank you.
My pleasure.
See you in the morning.
You bet.
Thank you so much. Mike and McCarty, Lewis Avalone in for air in 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.